Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. C-Y-M-B-I-O. TIKA.com.
Coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
Welcome into Cleveland Browns Daily on a Monday, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio. Bootsy and the Bishops in Hawaii. Bootsy ran afoul of the law a little bit there. He was put on a little probation temporarily, but he's back now and thriving again. So that is very good. We'll keep you updated on everything that's going on there. Nathan Zagura alongside Tyvus Powell. What's going on, Tyvus?
You know what? Enjoying the off season and seeing all the great things that the Cleveland Browns are doing and seeing what else is up AB's sleeve.
I mean, it really feels like, and we'll get into more in depth on that, but it feels like, you know, we're in a pretty good place right now going into this draft that's coming up.
I agree with you. For the first time in quite some time, you know, everybody's getting impatient. They're like, oh, we need to improve this and that. And I look at the roster and I'm just like, maybe this is one of those seasons where you look at the season that they had and you understand that the Browns did a really good job last year of building depth. You know, obviously a lot of injuries took place, but the guys that stepped in were great. So you got a bunch of solid pieces. When your roster is that good, you don't need to go out there and make this big splash move. You just need to make sure everybody gets healthy and you make sure you put everybody in the right position to win games. And I think they got what they need right now. Maybe it's a couple of minor things they can do here and there, but for the most part, their guys are their guys.
Yeah, an hour or two, we're definitely going to go in depth here on this Browns roster with you, Tyvus, get all of your thoughts there, as well as in the second hour at 2:30, you can get your questions in. Buckeyes, Browns, NFL, whatever you want to know. Tweet us at Browns_daily and get the chance to hear from Buckeye legend Tyvus Powell. Some news. The Browns are reportedly bringing back safety Rodney McLeod and reportedly bringing back kicker Cade York.
Look at that.
I like that.
Listen, when I first seen that, I thought to myself, you know, maybe they're a year late behind this. You know, I think that last year, obviously, they gave him every chance during the preseason to try to win that job. And rightfully so. They drafted him in the fourth round. They really wanted him to be the kicker of the future. And he won everybody over with the big kick against Carolina a couple of years ago.
Yep.
But I also think that maybe you should have brought in some veteran presence in there just for that competition aspect. Now, listen, a lot of people, once he left and Dustin Hopkins came in there and did what he did, Dustin Hopkins right now is the kicker. He's won everybody
no
over.
Doubts.
Yes. Cade York is still a guy that they drafted and they still want to do well. Maybe pairing him with Dustin Hopkins and learning a thing or two, putting him in that competition, maybe that makes Cade a better kicker. Because at the end of the day, he still has a very strong leg. That's still a weapon that nobody else can say they have in this league.
Yeah, he's incredibly talented, right? And so part of it is kind of the rehabilitation of the mind.
Right.
There's no doubt that his leg has the skill. He was, you know, so good. I think 14 of 18 on 50-yard field goals in college. We all remember that game winner. But the inconsistency really plagued him. And now he's going to get to be with a guy who's been incredibly consistent in Dustin Hopkins. And, yeah, you hope that, you know, you hope Cade York doesn't kick for you in 2024.
Right.
You're looking at maybe in 2025, Dustin Hopkins free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got Cade York who you drafted. It just happens to be in his fourth year.
And then on top of that, Dustin Hopkins figured something out. You know, even with the elements, the winds, the cold, he was unbelievable. So maybe he can teach those things to Cade, and Cade can be the kicker of the future.
I think that's exactly what you're hoping, right?
Yes.
Is that you get him back here, and then because you drafted Cade York to be your kicker for a long, long time.
Yes, you did.
And
he started off well. Like I say, the one big kick, 58 yards, nailed it.
Nailed it. Yeah, nobody will ever forget that moment. That's for sure. Not me. All right, our brackets. Did you do a bracket this year?
I didn't. You know what? I'm at peace because I did not do a bracket. Even though I would have picked either UConn or Houston, I'm still at peace.
No bridge just because no interest?
No, because I got busy. I got extremely busy that I never sat down to actually feel.
Come on, Titus. It's like 5 minutes is all it takes.
I figured to myself, listen, I'm picking UConn versus Houston. There it is. If that happens, then I would have won my bracket.
Well, right now you're looking. That's looking pretty good for you. You look
hey,
like
all
you
it took was
chance.
5 minutes for me to screw up mine.
See that right there, and you probably was miserable. You took all your papers, threw them off the desk, shredded the bracket because it was over. I don't want to go through that anymore.
I don't even mind it because it's not reflective of. Like, I know nothing about college basketball. So it's not like I thought I was smart. I just kind of did it and
you
see what
to
happens.
Be pretty good about that.
I used to right.
Is your champion still alive?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, well, then you still got a shot at this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, I got
UConn.
Houston.
I had Houston.
Okay, say, okay.
I got Houston. And I got, in this one, actually, so I have two brackets. This one, I have North Carolina. Which is still,
they're still good.
They're looking good. And then the other one, I have Houston. So I have two brackets.
Well, Houston gave you a scare last night.
Survive in advance.
Hey, that is what it's about.
Survive in advance.
I almost turned it off. It was like a minute and a half left. I'm like, oh, they're up 12.
You can do, listen, Purdue's 106-67 win over Utah State counts exactly the same as 100-95 over Texas A&M for Houston. To survive in advance. You're going to have a game like that, right? You always have at least one game like that in the tournament, I feel like, and they survived it. So that was good. I enjoyed watching some of it. Arizona, I was watching them. They were out to a big lead. That's my school. That's who I want to win it. Big lead early over Dayton. Dayton came back, and then Arizona put them away, which was great. Yeah, that's who I want to win it. That's probably the one school that I could name a couple people on the team.
I like a good underdog story. I love the Oakland over Kentucky, but obviously that legend came to an end. Yeah, and I think I wanted Yale.
Yeah, but NC State is still
alive. That's a good one.
They're 11. That's who beat Oakland. Yeah. The highest remaining seeds, you've got UConn, San Diego State 1-5, Houston, Duke 1-4, Illinois, Iowa State 2-3. NC State Marquette 2-11, Carolina Alabama's a 1-4, Arizona Clemson's 2-6, Creighton Tennessee 2-3, and Purdue Gonzaga 1-5. So, I mean, you got nobody other than you've got a 6 seed in Clemson and an 11 seed NC State. Everybody else is a top 5 seed.
I'm not rolling with Clemson.
No, me neither. Go Arizona. I love that. Let's get right to the Elite Eight, baby. I was very happy with that draw. Now, Clemson's done a good job, right? They smoked New Mexico, and then they beat Baylor pretty handily. But
well, they didn't have to come back against Baylor.
They did, though. Yeah. Beat them by 8, though, when it was all said and done.
I'm not rolling with Clemson. They're...
No, Arizona. Let's go. Bear down. The Wildcats. I like it. Gibby, so right now, Griff. Get Griff on them in third.
Yeah, he's ahead of AB.
Griff, who's Griff's champ?
Oh, no one else has it.
Arizona?
Go ahead, Griff. Get in here.
Griff. By the way, are you on Griff cam? Because I can't see what's going on out here.
One second.
Show people your fresh helmet.
I want to hear this.
Griff, looking good, brother.
Hey, he got to rip the paper over. Look
yeah,
at this.
He's got. I like
I
it.
Yeah. No, I got That's Illinois a... winning the national title.
Who?
Illinois.
I got Illinois.
A Big Ten school winning?
So you need that. You need the Illinois path for those at home. You need them to beat Iowa State. That's this Thursday night at 10:09 p.m. You going to stay up for that, Griff?
Yes, I will.
And then you're going to need them to beat the winner of UConn-San Diego State. Most likely, it feels like most likely UConn, right? So that's where you're at.
Yeah, I mean, I feel pretty confident. My Final Four is still intact right now.
Really?
Yeah. I got Illinois, Houston, Tennessee, and North Carolina.
Illinois.
You got UConn losing like that?
I do.
What about Arizona? Come on, Griff.
Look at you.
Hold on. Where does Arizona still alive, Gibbe? Where do you have Arizona winning this round to the Elite Eight?
I do, yes.
Okay, all right, fine. I'll take that.
Look at you. It's his bracket.
I was just curious. He's right about everything, so I just wanted to know if Arizona's got a chance to make it to the Elite Eight. And he said yes.
They're playing Clemson, right?
Yeah, they're playing Clemson.
I think they'll be okay.
I hope so.
I'm feeling pretty good about my bracket, considering I don't know a lick about college basketball this year. So,
well, apparently you do. You're beating Andrew Berry.
Yeah, I am, just by a couple of points.
Who's in first place?
Some lady in ticketing, I believe.
That's how it how it always goes. The women always do better than the men in this.
Good with the brackets. There's no doubt. All right, so me and Gibbe, Uno's 45th Gibbe, me and you 49th. Out of how many?
There's at least, I think there's like 106 brackets.
Yeah, so we're in the top half.
No, don't do that.
We're in the top half.
Don't do that. Y'all,
100%.
I hate to tell y'all.
I got three of my final fours left.
Your chances of winning this is over.
No, we're not. No.
It's done.
It's
done.
I won it. That would be wonderful, but that wasn't. I didn't do this just so that I would win the bracket.
Why do you do it then?
So I have a bracket. So I have something to like look at and care about the games.
No, Nathan. Where's your competitive spirit?
I have tremendous competitive spirit. I want to have competitive spirit in something that I feel like I have some knowledge and or say over the outcome.
You're supposed to do your research. You should have studied assists, coaches do in the postseason.
You said you didn't have time to even make a bracket. I took 5 minutes and made two.
I literally did 5 minutes.
I did 5 minutes.
Uno
I made
a bunch
two
of questions, and Malencic steered me wrong on like three teams.
So I have three of my final four left as well.
Same. I lost Baylor last night.
So in this
that
one,
was rough.
I'm confident that I would have done better than 49.
I have Arizona, Houston, and Purdue still alive.
I have Tennessee.
You feel
confident?
That's an outrageous comment. That's an outrageous comment to make. How can you even say that? You don't know.
I would have had. I don't even know who I would have had in the Final Four.
Oh, it's Lexi Norton who's in first.
Good for her.
Yeah. She knows her stuff.
She's got max 179. Griff's at max 178.
What's her champion?
Carolina. The two people ahead of Griff both have Carolina. So right now, if Carolina goes down, Griff, you're
Illinois
in good.
Illinois can somehow keep finding a way to win.
You have 33 more possible than AB. AB's probably going to head the wrong direction. You are the top
he looks
person.
At me just goes, yeah.
You're the top person left with Illinois. Jack Heidenthal is top person left with Arizona. Lexi Norton top with Carolina. AB the top one currently with Houston. But the person right below him, Gordon Williams, who's in the training department, great Gordo, he's got a higher total left. And then Tyler Harbison is the top guy with Connecticut. Tom Wyatt in ninth is the top one with Purdue, is the only Purdue.
Did Bo fill one out?
You could not in this one, I don't believe so. So, yeah, we're at 49. It goes all the way. It goes all the way to 103.
I got room to move up.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see.
I've got Houston, UConn, and I actually picked UConn to win this one. Repeat.
So you have 150 left of the 149s. There are people with 149 that have 170 left. I only have 134 left. So.
Gibby, I will let you know that if you're not in first place, you're in last.
This isn't Talladega Nights.
That's fair, TP. But this is strictly for bragging rights because we work in the NFL and we're not allowed to
we can't
play
do it.
For anything.
We're playing for nothing.
Stupidity at its finest.
Exactly. Playing for nothing. Just
I wish
for
I
the joy.
I wish I would have did a bracket now.
You should have done a bracket. You could have come in here like your boy Bijan. Maybe you would have had a perfect bracket
perfect in the first
on the first day.
Yeah.
Never By the know. Way, what did he do the rest of the time?
Not good.
Nothing.
Nothing. I mean, it went nothing. Like off a cliff, I think.
Yeah.
But he still, the first 2 days, he had a 16-16.
See,
is
this
impressive.
Is my problem. Like, Uno told me McNeese State. Guess what? McNeese didn't make it out of the first round.
Yeah.
Then it was my own stupidity. I was like, TCU, they're legit. They're better than everybody thinks, and I'm not buying Purdue. I had TCU winning and going all the way to the Elite Eight. They lost in the first round.
Wait, you thought TCU was going to beat Purdue?
Yeah.
Why?
No. See, the thing
I have no faith in Purdue.
Well, Purdue did that last year with Fairleigh Dickinson. They weren't going to do that again.
No. I had them losing in the second round.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought this was a first round.
Everything else I had was great. Kentucky screwed me up.
Kentucky is the one that got me because I had Kentucky going a little bit.
I probably would have had Kentucky too, so I can't be mad at that one.
Yeah, out to Oakland in the first round. Come on. Come on, man. Although that was awesome. Golke, they became a hero.
Yeah, he had a couple NIL deals, too.
I'm sure.
He had like two NIL deals after that game. I said, hey, make the money while you can.
Yes. That's a cool thing, though, right, in sports now, that he can have that moment. He becomes a sensation, and not only will companies capitalize on it, but he gets a chance to cash in on it.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
That's how it should be.
Even though he's been in the league or college basketball for like 6 years.
Doesn't matter.
By the way, I had this conversation this morning with a couple people outside the BA department, smartest people in the building, not named AB or Kevin Stefanski. Maybe a few others. Paul D. Podesta.
Okay.
In my opinion, they're very smart people. They have equations written on dry erase boards and things that I don't even know what
like
that
is. Like A squared plus B squared equals C squared.
I don't even know what that equals or what
that's
that is.
That's the Pythagorean theorem.
Sure.
You got
great.
That one.
I think I slept through that entire semester, if that's the case.
It's for triangles, Gibby.
Sure. Great. All right.
C is the hypotenuse.
Yeah. I went into radio, so I'd have one radio TV class, or one math class, I should say.
Okay.
Smart
All right.
man.
All right. What's the point you were trying to make at the beginning of the story?
Trying to go Please, back.
Have you forgotten?
I think I might have.
You were talking with the business analytics people.
Yeah, what were we talking
about? And then you, I don't know.
Oh,
it's
no,
your story.
We have to eliminate. So I know what it was. Hold on. I know what it was.
Okay.
We've got to eliminate, like, the whole COVID year. Because you get, like, extra years and extra years. There was a player on a team this weekend that has played for four different colleges. Like,
that
you're on your sixth
an
year.
End, though,
this needs to come to an end. The whole COVID. Well, it was during COVID. He played during COVID. This needs to go bye-bye.
I think that transfer portal thing, like, I think that's the thing that needs to be critiqued the most. I do. That I think you get
well,
three,
especially in football.
I think you get three times to transfer without penalty. Like, I think that's a little bit too many.
It used to be you had to sit out a year.
Yeah.
If you transferred.
And it made you think about it. But now they I don't
Well know. Now and that's why you're seeing so many. I mean, you once you have a guy on your team, you won the recruitment for a year. You have to then re-recruit them every single year to keep people on your – it's absurd.
It is.
Yeah, that's,
it really
why do you think
is.
Saban's like, yeah, no, not –
Yeah,
no
I don't
thanks.
Blame him.
Not doing this.
He's not the only one. I feel like what he did is going to be a bunch of coaches that feel that same way and going to be like, yeah, we got to get out of here.
Yes.
That's why that guy from Halfley from Boston College was like, I'm going back to the NFL.
Yeah.
I don't need this.
No, definitely don't need that. All right, so that was fun. So games again – Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then we'll have our final four for this tournament. It is fun. It's so much coverage. There's always a game on. Like, no matter what you're doing, I was doing some, you know, chores around the house, doing some and running errands, and there's just always action.
But I will tell you this, the best thing that has been done in the coverage of the NCAA tournament is bringing in the NBA on TNT guys. Barkley and Kenny Smith. Like, Kenny Smith, the night that Kentucky got eliminated.
Oh, yeah, Captain Obvious.
Captain Obvious. And then last night, who was the team?
When was Barkley talking about showering in his uniform?
What?
I don't
know. So my buddy just sent me his clip. It's from this year's tournament. It's Clark Kellogg.
Yeah, so it would have been last night's crew, maybe?
So it was Clark Kellogg, Greg Gumbel.
Oh, that's a previous one. Gumbel's
Kenny
not
Smith.
Doing it this year.
Okay, so then it's an old one. Kenny Smith and Charles. And Charles Barkley's talking about when he was a rookie in the league, in the NBA, they would fly commercial, which I find it hard to believe, but I guess maybe in the 80s they flew commercial. And if they played a night game and then flew out the next morning to go to their next game, he said he had to wash his uniform. Like, they didn't have, like, time or they didn't have a staff that washed the uniforms for him. And so he said that the best way to wash his uniform was he would take a shower back in his hotel room in the uniform and then let it dry. And Clark's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, take it off, soap it up, wash it in the shower. Like, you don't need to be wearing your uniform to wash it in a shower. And Chuck was like, no, I thought it was the best way. And, like, Clark Kellogg was losing his mind. Kenny's like, you're completely insane.
Yeah,
This was Barkley last night after the Alabama Grand Canyon game. Barkley, I want to congratulate Alabama University on advancing. That's his dig since, you know, he's an Auburn guy.
Yeah.
It was a heck of a game. Grand Canyon, that was the dumbest game of basketball I think I may have ever seen. Like, everyone went one-on-one. They missed how many free throws? I'm not sure what they were doing offensively. I don't think they ran a play the entire second half. That was some of the dumbest basketball I've ever seen from grown college men.
Isn't, like, Thunder Dan their coach? Who's the coach of Grand Canyon?
It's not Thunder Dan.
So they basically got a bunch of money. They're in the whack, and they became like
– Oh, it's Bryce Drew.
So they became a basketball powerhouse. They got all this money. They went 30-5 this year. A guy actually from my high school got recruited to play there.
They won their first round game.
Yeah.
So clearly they're doing something right, but he was right, by the way. Barkley was totally right.
Well, they only had one dude. He had 29. The rest of them had like 6 and 8.
Well, that's because the rest of them went a combined
I'm looking
9 for 34.
I'm looking
it just became a giant track meet against Alabama.
They went 9 for 34 the rest of their team. One guy had 29, and he was only 9 of 22.
Yeah,
and he was 9 of 16 from the line.
Well,
They shot 32% from the floor, 10% from three, and 62% from the line. Like, I could do that right now.
That's a recipe for disaster.
And I'm old.
They made 2 of 20.
2 of 20 from three. They missed 14 free throws. They were 23 of 37 from the line. That's atrocious.
They make them alone, they win the game.
Yeah. I mean, Alabama wasn't much better. 37 from the floor, but at least 26 from three. They made 8 threes. So 8 threes, that's 18 points of difference right there on threes.
Yeah, that's – you got to get back to the fundamentals. That's what's wrong with the game today. Fundamentals, Nathan.
That's right.
Fundamentals. Everybody want to be Steph.
Well, and there's only one. And there's only one Steph, and that's for a reason.
I sound like the old guy in the room.
And you're not.
No.
Not even close.
I think we've established that.
Yeah, not even close.
Yeah, y'all.
You still have half of the life you've currently lived to add to your current age to be our age. So you're not the old man in the room. Although you are sounding like one very early on. That's good. I think, though, now I have a question for you. Now that you're, 30, do you see – the wisdom of what was said about the Atlanta Falcons a year ago when you were in your 20s?
Whew. You know, when that statement was made a year ago, that right there is...
It was the draft. Wasn't it the draft show?
Yeah,
on CBD and then continued
to the draft show. Yeah. But it was like draft week. It was right after
Correct. They
did just draft.
It was just amazing how you didn't see it, and I did. I was like... You don't see what's going on here. You like, oh, Titans, they're not serious at all. And then 1 year later, there they make a great move.
Titus,
and,
I appreciate you coming through on that.
So what are you saying right now? You're saying that I was wrong a year ago?
Yes.
They were serious.
Yes.
So then they...
Wasn't they one game from winning the conference?
Titus, they fired everybody.
Yeah, they did.
And then they said, you know what we have to do is get a quarterback.
They did.
Hello? And then that's what they did.
Well,
now they're serious. For the record, you did, and I loved it. You text me, you're like, all right, the Falcons are serious now. Now they're serious. I was like, yes, I love it. You got to have a quarterback.
I wasn't out on Ritter.
Apparently they are. They're out on Ritter. They're out on Arthur Smith.
Yeah.
Well, that's good riddance. Addition by subtraction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Arthur Smith kind of did that to himself. So, yeah.
We like Jameis because Jameis – irritated Arthur Smith to no end in his final moment as a head coach in the National Football League. So that makes me very happy. That made me very happy. Yeah, this has been fun. All right, we'll talk a little bit about the offseason. When we come back, we're going to talk a little about the owners' meetings down in Florida. We had a big trade over the weekend as well. We're going to hear from Trevor Sikkema is going to join us around 1:40, the lead draft analyst for Pro Football Focus, calling in on the Twisted Tea Hotline to go over his 3-round mock draft. And then we've got Kevin Stefanski from the owners' meetings, 8 minutes of new coach talk, coach speak. We'll get Tyvus' thoughts on the Browns free agency, the players they're keeping, and the Browns defense. And then we'll do a little Ask Tyvus. Tweet us your questions. The Browns_Daily, Buckeyes, Browns, NFL. What do you want to know? That's what's coming your way. All right, back with more Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back. Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio. Nathan Zgura and Tyvus Powell with you here. And Tyvus, got some news from the NFL owners' meetings in Florida. First up, the NFL Competition Committee unanimously votes to ban the hip drop tackle against the wishes of the NFLPA.
Nathan, this one got me upset. Like, I am really, really mad about this.
Why are you mad about it?
Because I, It seems like every year they always do things to help the offense, but do nothing to help the defense. Fair. And maybe it's because I'm a former DB that I'm mad like this, but what do you expect a corner to do who's a buck 85 when they throw the ball to a tight end and he has to go tackle that tight end? How do you think he's supposed to get him down? Like, he's gotta wrap him up and he's gotta drop his hips. He's just gotta drop his weight. Now you telling me you're banning that so they can't do that. So what, he's gonna jump on his back now and get dragged for yards?
Like, so what do they want to, like, kind of stand up and hold him until somebody else comes?
No, that's still giving up yards. Every inch matters in football. This is a game of inches. So you have to get him down immediately. That's not like I understand.
You can't also tackle him low.
Exactly. I understand that there's injury risk when you do the hip drop. There's guys that's drop their hips and guys
they land on the ankle, and that's how we've seen, like, Mark Andrews.
I get all of those things, and I'm here for that. But my job is to stop the carrier by any means necessary. I can't, like, that's the only way I'm going to be able to do it. So I'll be eager to see what is being taught. Now, don't get me wrong. When I play football, they teach you how to tackle the proper way. You want to use your shoulders. You want to grab a leg, eyes through the thighs, drive for 5 yards. But not every tackle is going to be made that way. A lot of guys in the NFL is really good at moving their legs out of the way. Like a Christian McCaffrey, he jumps out the way and stuff like that. So sometimes you have to grab them by the waist, around the waist, and you have to drop your weight.
Especially if they're running away from you.
Exactly. So I don't know. It's really putting the defense at a disadvantage, and I'm very frustrated by it.
Give a, what does it mean that it is banned?
I hope you ain't getting ejected.
Like, what? Yeah. What is that? What does it mean to be banned?
I don't. I'm going off.
The NFLPA said that they wanted it to be a.
They went against the owners went against the NFLPA. That I do know.
Yeah,
right,
because the NFLPA realizes that, hey, we played in this game and we understand, like, this is the one.
Right.
Only
here's what here's what I got. Okay. Okay, NFL owners have approved a rule proposal to ban the swivel hip drop tackle. The league announced Monday the violation will result in a 15-yard penalty if flagged in games. But Troy Vincent, the NFL's executive vice president, strongly implied last week that this is likely to be enforced similarly to the use of the helmet rule, which typically leads to warning letters and fines in the weeks after a game rather than just flags during the play.
Hmm.
So
you're going to get fined.
It might be a fine. Interesting. So the proposal is written to address only a subset of rugby tackling style that has spread around the NFL in recent years. The tackling technique often results in lower body injuries. The rule requires officials to note two actions. If a defender, quote, grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms and also unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing on and trapping the runner's legs at or below the knee. So it sounds, the way that this is written to me, that if you did a hip drop tackle, but you didn't land on their legs or trap their legs, then that would not be a violation.
That's going to be interesting to see, because there's been many times I've made a tackle where you do the spin thing. You get them and you spin and you drop your hips.
Like an alligator roll?
Yeah. Like, I don't know if I landed on their legs, but.
Well, it's happening very quickly.
Yeah.
I think people are so used to seeing things in slow motion now because of replays.
Yeah.
That you've been on the field playing,
right.
I've been on the sidelines.
Yeah.
This stuff happens so much faster than you can even get your head around.
So my thing about it is, I don't think it's going to – like, if I was playing today, it wouldn't stop me from doing it, because I'm going to get the guy down by any means necessary.
Yeah.
And if I get fined for it, then I just get fined for it. But, like, the flag part, if they're getting flagged for it, that's where it's like
– So here's what competition chairman Rich McKay said on Monday. He said the rule change does not eliminate the hip drop tackle, only the swivel technique that does not get used very often. When it is used, it is incredibly injurious to the runner. The runner is purely defenseless. I've heard defenders say before, and I hear them, hey, you're putting me in a really tough spot. You're saying, I can't hit here, so what do I do? My response has always been, well, you can't do that. That's just because the guy you're hitting is defenseless and has no way to protect himself. So we've got to protect him. You've got to come up with other ways, and you know what they do. Yes, we outlawed the hip drop, but what you what you may think are the drag from behind where he falls on the leg, that's still a tackle. This is only that tackle where the player is lifting themselves in the air and falling on the legs. So if you lift yourself in the air, you can pull them down as long as you don't fall on their legs.
I mean, that makes it a little bit better. At the end of the day, listen.
He's trying to say
so. I got to see the video clip. I got that. When I'm sure before they start training camp, every referee is going to come in. They're going to show them the video and show them exactly what they're talking about. But right now, when you say hip drop, like, I'm just thinking of all the hip drop tackles I've ever made. And I'm like, you're crazy if you think I'm not about to do that.
So NFL Executive Vice President Jeff Miller said that last year there were 230 instances of the tackling technique occurring during a game.
Okay.
So if you think about, let's see, there are 32 teams, right?
Mm-hmm, 17.
And every team plays 17 games, so 32 times 17. So there are 544 games.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably bad math. Some of them are against it. Anyway. So they're saying it happened not even once every couple of games.
So it's a particular. So that means that this is a particular style that they're talking about.
So I don't. So that's the right math, right? Every team does play 17 games. You have to add it up, however you get there. So there are 544 games played in the National Football League.
Yeah, I would be. They should release a clip of what they're talking about exactly, so people can know what to look for, because when you say, like, oh, you talking about the running down and just dropping your weight, that's still a tackle. Okay, well, that's the one I'm talking about the majority of the time.
Hold on, maybe my math is wrong. Let's think about it this way. I'm trying to figure it out. So there would be 16 games a week.
Mm-hmm.
Numbers go up and down based because you get the extra week. But if every team in the NFL played, there'd be 16 games every week.
Yes.
They're true for 17 weeks. This is the right math. So it's 16 times 17. That's how many games are actually played. 272.
So it's about almost.
So they're saying once a game, less than once a game, this happens.
Okay. Well, then it shouldn't have affected that much. I guess somebody just going to get fined a little bit.
15 injuries, so that means there was about one injury from it a week.
Yeah.
Okay. The NFLPA joined many current and former players in objecting to the proposal. In a statement posted to social media, the NFLPA said the rule would cause confusion among players, coaches, officials, and fans.
I'm confused.
I agree. Monday, former player J.J. Watt was among those who expressed displeasure with the owner's vote. Just fast forward to the belts with the flags on them, is what he said. Current players also weighed in, including DJ Reader, Darius Slay, and Javon Holland. DJ Reader, these rules are getting crazy out here. Two-hand tag better fits the game. It's a lot. There's about to be a lot of missed tackles, said Darius Slay. Breaking news, tackling ban, said Javon Holland. In addition, two other proposals were approved. Teams will receive a third challenge following one successful challenge. Previously, teams had to be successful on two to receive a third. Proposal was submitted by the Detroit Lions and also approved. A major foul by the offense will be enforced before a change of possession in situations where there are fouls by both teams. A major foul by the offense will be enforced before a change of possession in situations where there are fouls on both teams.
A major foul will be enforced by the offense if there is fouls.
Isn't that offsetting?
I'm about to say, so there's no offsetting anymore? Is that what you're saying?
No. I don't know. I don't know what that means exactly. Let's see if, maybe there's more explanation here in this article as we go around.
Major foul on both teams. That's an offsetting foul.
So it's you know this one, Gibby? No? All right, real quickly. They had not vote to modify the kickoff, however, a vote could still take place on Tuesday. The competition proposal would move the majority of kicking and return teams downfield to minimize high-speed collisions, and it would also change where they came
out. We'll hear more about that with Kevin Stefanski in the 2 o'clock hour from the owners' meetings. He was asked about that.
All right, other news really quickly. Squealer head coach Mike Tomlin, that's his word. Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin reiterates that Russell Wilson has the pole position to be their starting quarterback. And one move from the weekend, the Chiefs are trading. This has been rumored for so long. It finally happened. Legarius Sneed to Tennessee. Secondary for the Titans is impressive, Gibbe. Who's in that secondary?
Oh, God, you got to ask me that.
You put it in the rundown.
I was about to say.
Off the top of my head, I don't remember, but.
Who is the other corner?
Well, Byard's gone.
Byard's gone.
Caleb Farley? Did they draft Caleb Farley?
They had Caleb Farley, but he was.
All right, Tennessee Titans. Here we go.
There, I got it.
Legarius Sneed.
Okay.
Chidobe Awuzie.
Oh, I like him. Yep. Chido.
Caleb Farley. And the safeties are Amani Hooker and Elijah Molden. And the nickels, Roger McCreary.
They're not bad.
I mean, yeah, solid. That's a solid group. It ain't. It's not impressive.
If you're giving me the secondary for the Titans is .. impressive.
I may have heard that over the weekend.
Yeah.
I'm also on a tremendous amount of sinus medication for the sinus infection I'm currently dealing with.
All right. When we come back, Trevor Sikkema is joining us from Pro Football Focus to talk the 2024 NFL Draft. He's got a 3-round mock that is out right now. We'll go through that, tell you who we gave to the Cleveland Browns and why. That's coming up next year. Cleveland Browns Daily brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now. Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Don't miss Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for the first time ever, Friday, September the 13th at Cleveland Browns Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. Visit clevelandbrownsstadium.com/BillyandRod2024 for more information. It's Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for one night only. Tyvus, you got your tickets? I know you do. You don't have to answer that. Of course you do. Of course you do. Because it's one night only. It might never happen again. Never happened before. Will never happen again. Get your tickets right now. All right, time to talk a little draft with Trevor Sikkema, the lead draft analyst for Pro Football Focus, and he's calling in on the Twisted Tea Hotline, brought to you by Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea, an official sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Keep it twisted, Cleveland. Trevor, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, guys. Appreciate you having me.
All right. Obviously, for the Browns, the final year, we hope, of not having a first-round pick. So we won't participate in that. But let me just ask you in general about your mock. What were some of the big kind of sticking points or where you thought things got interesting? And I noticed you had a trade early on at number 4, the Vikings, who got that second first-rounder coming up to get J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the talking point of the entire draft, right? What's going to happen in the top 5? I think that we're going to start quarterback for this draft, whether it's Washington picking at 2 or New England picking at 3. I think no matter what, if one of those two teams trades out, it's only for a team trading in to get a quarterback. So I think that we're going to start the draft at least with 3 quarterbacks. And then the ultimate question becomes, what happens at 4 and 5? I think the Arizona Cardinals, their general manager, Monty Ossenfort, he showed last year, he's not afraid to do a little bit of wheeling and dealing. You know, they moved back from 3 to 12 and then from 12 to 6 to get the guy that they really wanted. And I think he's open for business at number 4. I think that Jim Harbaugh, Joe Ortiz, the new regime with the Chargers, they're open for business at number 5 if one of those teams wants to trade up for a quarterback. And I think that we'll probably get that J.J. McCarthy pick. I believe it's going to be J.J. McCarthy as QB4, somewhere in the top 5. So that means 4 out of the top 5 picks in this draft feel like they're going to be quarterback. They're just, this year specifically, too many teams that desperately need one. And so I think that's the biggest sticking point with the draft. And then I think after that, the ripple effect of what happens, right? I think that Minnesota at number 11, I think the Denver Broncos at number 12, the Las Vegas Raiders at number 13, whichever teams don't end up trading up for a quarterback, what do they do? Do they become big trade down candidates? Are teams in the early 20s now going to look to trade up for an offensive lineman, a pass rusher, a cornerback, positions that we think could be really valuable right outside of the top 10? So those, to me, right, picks 4 and 5 and then 11, 12, and 13, those are the big pinpoints for what I think could happen in this draft that makes it interesting.
Just real quick to follow up down at the top and then let Tyvus jump in here. So if the Cardinals at 4, they could get Marvin Harrison. And you look at their receiving core, they've got nobody for Kyler Murray really to throw the ball. Trey McBride's been a very nice tight end, but the receivers, Michael Wilson, showed some promise as a rookie, but there really isn't a star there. Would you be surprised if they trade it out and then I see in your mock they go on defense with the first 2 picks? Would you be surprised if they didn't add to the weapons there, or do you have that going on later on, second and third round?
Yeah, so, you know, I have them going wide receiver in the second round, but there's no question about it. You know, even with a deeper wide receiver class, the guys like Malik Nabers, guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., Romo Dunze, they look better on the depth chart than anybody that you're going to get in the second round. But I do wonder if Arizona is not afraid to have a move like that. Of course, they need a wide receiver, but this team is still in rebuilding mode, right? It's probably going to take one, maybe two more drafts to really get this roster where you want. So if you have an opportunity to trade down from 4 to 11 and get an extra first-round pick this year, maybe even another extra first-round pick next year for the move, you know, all of a sudden that could be very worth it for them if they're taking their rebuilding into a two-year plan, right? If it's only a one-year plan, if they are trying to slingshot this rebuild and really compete next year, go for a playoff spot, something like that, then yeah, maybe it's less likely that they move out of four because they do need that high-end wide receiver to help out their passing offense. But if it's a more longer-term view on how you want to rebuild this team, sure, trade down from 4 to 11, go with the top defensive players that you can in the first round of this draft, because I think that's where the sweet spot is for them. And then next year, really, you could go all in to go get a receiver, whether it's in the draft or in free agency or something like that, because for as much as wide receivers that are picked up in the top of the draft can really help out your football team, there's so many good wide receivers out there in the NFL that they become available quite often. I think more often than we realize, right? You're sitting here with an opportunity where Tyreek Hill has moved teams over the last couple of years. Stephon Diggs has moved teams. T. Higgins is basically on the block right now. So you always have opportunities to maybe go get a star receiver, whether it's in the draft or free agency. And so for Arizona, just because they really need one doesn't mean that you've got to stick it for this year to take one, in my opinion.
When I look at this, Trevor, I see that you got Quinyon Mitchell as the first DB taken off the board here by Arizona because you got them trading down to 11. Is he the best corner in the draft this year?
I think that he is, and I think the NFL is going to agree on that. It feels like it's either him or Terrion Arnold. It feels like the NFL is really high in the Alabama corner there as well. But when you look at Quinyon Mitchell, elite coverage grade in PFF's database over the last 2 years, and getting an elite coverage grade, very, very difficult thing to do, because not only is the baseline of doing your job very difficult as a corner because of all the things that could go wrong, right? We talk about it's almost like baseball. It's a position where you know you're going to fail. You just want to succeed a little bit in the moments that matter most, and that feels like kind of the cornerback play. Quinyon Mitchell has back-to-back elite cornerback graded seasons over the last 2 years, which is extremely impressive. The most forced incompletions of any DB in college football over the last 2 years. And then really the only question mark that we had about Mitchell going into the offseason was he played cover three a lot, right? They didn't put him in man coverage. They didn't put him in press very much while he was at Toledo. And you wondered, okay, is that just because the rest of the defense isn't really talented enough to play press coverage, or is it because Quinyon isn't comfortable playing press coverage? And he went to the Senior Bowl and they put him in press coverage a lot, and guess what? He just locked down basically everybody that he went up against. And so you answer that question, you go to the combine, you reaffirm what a great athlete he is. And so the production overall with grades, the ball production, now proving that he can play a variety of different coverage assignments, and you're checking the athleticism box too. It's hard for me to think that a corner is having a better draft season than Quinyon Mitchell is, and I think he'll be CB1 because of it.
As we look at the Browns, no pick until number 54 in the second round. You have Roman Wilson out of Michigan, and he would join a pretty crowded room that would have, you know, Jerry Jeudy, Amari Cooper, Elijah Moore, and then a couple of third-round picks, David Bell and Cedric Tillman of the last two seasons. What do you like about Wilson, and do you see that as a guy that would have an impact this year, or more somebody who would ascend to being a starter next year when the Browns obviously will have to make some changes in that wide receiver room?
Yeah, I think it's probably more of the latter, certainly since the Jerry Jeudy trade has happened. But I think that Roman Wilson is just a really good wide receiver overall. So, you know, you go into this year and it's the last year on Elijah Moore's contract. You know, you're hoping Cedric Tillman really steps up as well and can play that on the line of scrimmage, kind of the X alpha receiver that you want in those contested catch red zone situations. So you're hoping that for him. Jerry Jeudy obviously gets a really great payday, so he's not going anywhere. You're going to utilize him plenty. But for Roman Wilson, he's just a really good receiver. I think pound for pound, he's a really good blocker as well. There's that slogan in Michigan, hey, no block, no rock, which means if you're not doing what you need to do to help out in the running game, you're not getting on the field and you're not getting thrown the football. But Roman Wilson, over the last 2 years, got more and more volume because he was willing to do that despite being a smaller player. So really good vertical guy. I think he's got great speed, former track background. His mom was a track star as well in high school. So he's got that DNA to him. And I feel like he would be a great in-the-mix type of a player to allow them to have more of a vertical presence in their offense this upcoming year. And that could blossom into a more versatile role as time goes on. And especially it would give them the flexibility to not have to pay Elijah Moore if they're kind of on the fence between doing that. So to me, that was more of a depth move and something that I like for a team that, man, when you look at the Browns roster for what feels like the third year in a row, they're good enough to compete. They just got to go out and really show their stuff, show what they're capable of doing. And I think that Roman Wilson only makes you a better passing offense being able to do that.
You know, now that we're in the second round here and I'm looking at some of these wide receivers you got, a lot of people want to know, you know, who's the second round receiver that you have in here that you think goes on to have a really good NFL career?
Man, I think that there could be a handful. You know, we're talking about a really deep wide receiver class, and it feels like we say that every year, but we really mean it this year. I mean, there's only so many first-round pick wide receivers that are going to happen. So you got guys like Roman Wilson, like a Ricky Pearsall from Florida, a Jermaine Burton from Alabama, a Jalen Polk from Washington, Xavier Leggett from South Carolina, Jalen McMillan from Washington is somebody who I think is very underrated in this class just because of the attention that Romo Dunze and Jalen Polk have gotten throughout the rest of the year. I mean, Javon Baker from UCF, I think, would be a top eight wide receiver in most other draft classes, but it feels like he's wide receiver 14 in this draft class because it's so deep. And so there's just a handful of names of really talented players that a lot of them are a little bit smaller. You know, I think the only one that I named right there that could probably play that X type of role for you might be Xavier Leggett. But outside of that, you got these slot guys, these flankers, these off the line of scrimmage, you know, pre-snap motion movement players that you get with momentum who can use their leverage and that speed against different types of coverages, different types of defensive backs. I mean, it's not that these guys are just athletic either. They're smart. You know, I think that's the adjective that I would use to describe this wide receiver class is there's so many smart wide receivers who understand how to win at the position in so many ways that are just beyond the athletic abilities that they have. And that's why you have so many guys that you want to give these day two grades on, these second round grades, third round grades, because it's hard to see them really flopping or failing because of how well they understand how to win at the position. So those are a handful of names that, again, I could see somewhere in the second round, somewhere on day two, where I think could be big impact players when we're looking back on it.
Speaking of day two, tackle, I think, is a position that the Browns could attack either on the defensive line or just at the tackle position. And you have a guy going 62 to the Ravens, a tackle out of Yale, that I think would be an interesting fit for the Browns. What do you like about him? And is he a guy that, you know, the Browns probably don't need a tackle this year, but I think they're going to need a starting tackle potentially next year. How would he fit in there?
Right. Yeah, Kieran Amagaji is the offensive tackle from Yale, who I think that when you watch his level of competition that he goes up against, he absolutely dominates it. And that is what you want to see, right? For somebody who has, you know, they're not playing in a Power 5, they're not playing in the SEC or anything like that. Like, you've got to see these dudes absolutely dominate their level of competition. And to me, Kieran Amagaji looks like a future NFL player playing with, all due respect, a lot of guys who aren't going to make it to the NFL. And he makes that known with how he plays there. So to me, he's got that tackle guard versatility. I think that he can play tackle. I really do. I think that he's got the measurables, the size, and he's got the foot quickness, that explosiveness, just the overall build to be able to play tackle. But also, he's somebody who I think could really succeed and get a starting role in guard as well. So that versatility there, to me, should make him a second-round choice. If he gets to the third round, I think it's simply because he's playing at Yale and he's not playing at these bigger conferences. But I agree with you. I think that he'd be great for him. You know, I looked at offensive tackle as well going through this mock draft for the Browns, because it's something that, hey, look at what the Philadelphia Eagles have done, right? They've had a couple of instances where they've had to change things up on the interior, but they've been totally fine with that because they're drafting for the future. You know, they're getting this farm system, almost this like MLB, you know, AAA system in their trenches. And I think all the other teams can kind of take a look at that and take something from it when it comes to that strategy. So I would love for the Browns to go with an offensive lineman, either at tackle, somebody who might be a guard but could also swing at tackle, and you mentioned interior defensive line as well. That's, I think, a good investment for him.
Well, let's look at your third-round pick for the Cleveland Browns. At 85, you got them getting Cedric Gray from North Carolina. What is it about him at linebacker that you like about him, and how does he fit with the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, I just think specifically just the athleticism overall. You know, he's a little bit more of a traditional linebacker than, say, like JOK was when he was coming into the league. Now, Owusu-Koramoah has blossomed into just a fantastic second-level defender overall. He's got so much versatility, so much speed. You can rely on him in so many ways. But you look at the rest of that linebacker group, you bring in Devin Bush, you bring in Jordan Hicks, and it's like, okay, yeah, those are good plug-and-play guys for this year. How much are you really – thinking that they're going to hold on to future roles for you. And Cedric Gray is somebody who I think he's got some nice pop of athleticism when he's on tape. I think he's a little bit inconsistent. But to me, I like him for Cleveland because they don't have a dire linebacker need with those veterans in there right now. But drafting a player like Gray or just taking a chance on another linebacker that could fall to them in the third round, that's something that I continue to like that strategy for them, again, because it's a lot like the offensive tackle. You might not need one exactly right now, but if you have that developmental prospect there for you, it makes the transition much easier going into a 2025, a 2026, and something like that.
Trevor, we certainly appreciate the time. How hard is it or how fun is it to do a three-round mock? I mean, the first round, you see a lot of those. When you get three-round, you're really kind of thinking strategically the whole way through. Is that a fun exercise for you?
No, it is. It's a ton of fun, you know, because when you do those first-round mocks, and Daniel Jeremiah says this best, you know, when you do first-round mocks, you're doing them with your ears, right? When you do big boards and rankings, you're doing them with your eyes. You know, you're ranking how you see these players. But mock drafts are often what you are hearing other teams will do. Well, if you get to go in round two and round three, then you get to put your own kind of personal flavor into it. You get to build a draft strategy for these teams, and you get to say, okay, if they go here, which is what I'm hearing, then this is what I would do in rounds two, rounds three, something like that. So it also, of course, allows me to give a shout-out to some fan bases who love the draft as well, who might not have first-round picks like Cleveland Brown fans out there. So love connecting with them as well. So it's a lot of fun when I get to do these three-round mocks.
All right, you can check it out at PFF.com. Trevor Sikkema, the lead draft analyst, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
All right, when we come back on Cleveland Browns Daily, we'll kick off hour number two, potentially with a surprise. If not, we'll hear from the head coach here at Cleveland Browns from the owners' meetings, Kevin Stefanski. It's Cleveland Browns Daily brought to you by Ballybetta, sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio. What a treat, kicking off hour number two with a returning member of the Cleveland Browns, Rodney McLeod. Rodney, welcome back, man.
Man, I'm excited to be back.
I can tell. I see your smile. Let's start with right. How's the arm? How are you feeling?
Man, it's good. Things are progressing well. You know, I expect to make a full recovery. And honestly, it's been a straightforward procedure. You know, I've gone through ACLs, rotator cuffs, but the bicep has been straightforward. Nothing's ever seamless, but for the most part, I'm good. So, feel strong, lifting up my dog. You know, I brought her in with me. So, no issues.
So I know how hard that had to be for you getting injured at the end of the season last year. But, you know, in talking to guys like Ronnie and DeAnthony, you stayed so involved and so present and added so much behind the scenes that people didn't see. To me, says so much about who you are as a guy, player, teammate, all of that. What was that experience like for you? And did you get some gratification out of the way you were able to mentor those young guys and a guy like Ronnie and DeAnthony making huge plays down the stretch?
Yeah, I think to the first point, the injury, it was devastating for me, you know, to, you know, work that hard and to now enter into a new locker room. You know, every player prides themselves on availability and being available for your team, and not at the start of the year, but that means from, you know, OTA training camp all the way through to, you know, hopefully the Lombardi. And I fell last year, like I let my guys down, you know, by not finishing. And it kind of was an incomplete story for me. And I think everything inside of me, of course, wanted to make that moment about myself. But, you know, as you evolve and over my time in the league, you know, I've because of the way I was brought in, and I had great veterans like Courtland Finnegan, Quinn Michael to guide me, to help shape me and make me the player that I am, I felt I needed to also serve that role in that room for some of those young men. And so for me, I couldn't turn my back, right? Like, I'm not on the field, but I can contribute in a way off the field that's going to help.
And you did.
And still hopefully get us to where we ultimately want to get to. And, yeah, I just poured into those guys. You know, you talked about D-Bell, Rocket. Those guys had a remarkable year, and they excelled. And it was good to see, you know, knowing that a guy like myself – you know, was able to kind of help nurture them. But after I gave them a couple tools, man, they took it, they ran with it, and they made it their own.
Absolutely.
So after having next success with those young guys like that, is coaching in your future when you're there playing?
Man, so many people came up to me last year. Like, man, I mean, I really could see you coaching.
Yeah.
But it's different, you know, when we talk about, you know, you being a player coach versus a full-time coach.
Yes.
And those responsibilities look completely different.
Yes, they do.
So I don't want to sign off to that right now.
Probably. Yeah.
I need a shadow opportunity before I step foot in and put the headset on for real. But you know, it gave me a little insight into just what it takes to be a coach. And now, you just appreciate a lot of those men that stand before us and have to do the things that they do in order to prepare us and equip us for Sundays.
So when you look at last season, obviously things didn't go the way you planned them to. When you look at this upcoming season, what are some goals that you've already set for yourself that you want looking to accomplish? Because, I mean, you already won a Super Bowl before.
Yeah.
You came here and it was a new locker room. You had to get the trust in, bond with your new teammates. What are you looking to do this season?
Personally, I'm hungry for another Super Bowl.
Yes.
You know, once you touch that platform one time and you win it, and you feel everything that comes with it, that's the standard from here on out.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm chasing. I'm chasing another ring. Personally, like, I want to get over 20 interceptions in my career. I'm too short. So that's something that I'm looking to do, which is a huge achievement for me, you know, in my story. And honestly, just man, as a team, really looking to finish off the way we ended, just with the momentum. It obviously the ending wasn't what we hoped for, but there's a lot to build off of the energy, the passion, the camaraderie, the togetherness, man, everything about it, we were clicking. And so I think if we take that and move forward into this new season with, you know, new guys on the team, you know, we can go far. And I'm looking to have a complete year. I think I texted Stefanski. I said, man, we left food on the table.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
I'm hungry. Like, I left, like, we all left food, but I definitely left food on that table, and I got to come back for it. And for me, this is honestly saying, like, this is going to be my last lap. You know, whatever happens, happens, but I'm coming for it all. And I want it all.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah, we want it.
Well, you got me. Listen, I'm about to come out of retirement. You want me to come with you?
Let's do it.
Let's go. So you mentioned it for you. Think about your room. You know, Juan was dealing with that calf all year. Grant ended up missing time after having a great year and getting that contract. So there's probably all three of you that year didn't necessarily go the way that you wanted. And for you, you know, you had been healthy for the most part since, what, 2018?
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was a shock for all of you guys. And Juan had been healthy throughout his career. Grant, obviously, after the initial, you know, Achilles, had been healthy his career.
Yeah, and I you point to, you know, our room that extends over into
the whole team,
to various rooms in the whole team. Like, the storyline last year was, wow, like, how are they going to overcome this injury?
And then this.
And we did it every time.
Yeah.
We stood tall.
It'd be nice to see this team healthy, by the way.
And that's what I'm saying. Fully equipped. Let's come back and let's see how far we can go.
You mentioned being a new guy coming in the locker room, and you know, this will be now my 13th season here. I've seen a lot of locker rooms. I've never seen one like last year, and it felt like to me, observing you and the respect you had from your teammates, respect your peers, the coaches, even Coach Banda loved, obviously, having you in his room and is thrilled you're back. But it felt like you had been a Brown for forever, and in many ways, like they were coming into your locker room. And for real, and that was a very unique thing for me to observe with this team. But there was something special about it. I think you were very much kind of at the center of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with just the men that were in that locker room, because that's the hardest part about the game is trust and building that trust. And some of that was already, you know, was there. It did exist, but it took a few more pieces just to, you know, to link a few more arms together, which ultimately made us stronger.
Yep.
And you saw a lot of that come to life when we were hit with those adverse moments throughout the time, because a lot of teams, you know, coach told me you're going to face like three crises a year. You just never know what they're going to be. But it's the foundation that you build to be able to, when everything is going wrong, can you withstand the media, the fans, the family, maybe even drama, and all of these things looking to pierce that rock that you form. And is it truly durable? And you're going to find out in those moments. And I credit Stefanski and the staff for taking us out to Greenbrier, because I really felt in that moment that's where our identity and our togetherness was formed.
We might get to do
in
it
in 8
again.
Days.
You might get to do it again.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. I'm not necessarily looking forward to like the conditions, but
you're like, we did it once. It's great.
But you have me. I'm a believer now.
Yeah.
I truly believe that it removed us from society and our day-to-day routines and forced us to just commit to ball and commit to one another. For that span of time, and that really paid dividend for us.
Yeah, you can see it.
When you watch the playoffs, as obviously after we lost to the Texans, and you watch those playoffs, what was something that you learned, you know, from looking at other teams? Maybe some other player taught you something. Maybe you looked at your Browns teammates and said, "Hey, we can do this." What was your moment? What was your thoughts as the playoffs was going on?
As I watched on the sideline, I felt helpless because, again, like I talked about earlier, just availability and wanting to be a part. But I didn't see it as necessarily a loss for us. It's just a learning lesson, right? A lot of what was covered throughout the playoffs really just stems to, us making sure that we're fully, you know, equipped for that moment.
Yeah.
And honestly, for a lot of guys, it was the first time.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't know until you experience it what it's really like. Like, a lot of guys can try to explain it to you, but you have to live it for yourself. And I know, we're going to use that as a learning lesson and say, hey, man, like, when we are put in this position again, we're going to be fully prepared for everything that's involved, right? Because it's not only the preparation, but it's the end game moments. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, are you staying, you know, mentally focused? Are you able to still make adjustments? And all of these things are going on. And the environment itself, right, is also like
chaos
and distracting as is. So I just look at it as a learning lesson for us, and understanding that, you know, we didn't play our best game. We all know that. There were probably a lot of reasons why, long list, but at the end of the day, we're going to go back. And when the next opportunity presents itself, which it will this year, we're going to take it and we're going to run with it.
So I love it.
How, if at all, has Jim Schwartz changed from your first go-around in Philly to the guy that I know you were excited to come join here in Cleveland?
Not a bit. Not an ounce of that man has changed. And that's what you have to respect most about Jim, is he is always his authentic self. And what you see is what you're going to get. And it's hard for any person to come in first year and have the amount of success as he did,
yeah,
and really reshape the culture here defensively, mm-hmm. And not only reshape it, but man, just get breathe new life into it.
Empowered you guys
and
too.
Empowered us. Yeah. And the one thing I love about him, he allows each player to be themselves. Same way I spoke about it. He's his true self, and he allows guys to express their personality on the field. The energy, like you see it. I mean, you see G New, like all them guys dancing, all the handshakes that we have. It is contagious, and he encourages it. And it's been that way since I knew him in Philly. We were the same way. There's always each year you find something, right? Like some sort of identity that you run with. And you know, this year you see the D line; they had their turnover chain and things like that. So it's all those little things. We had a dog kennel. So with every turnover, we would bring the ball back. We would put it in the kennel. And we would bring the person up, whoever created the turnover, just to share a quick word or two. And man, like when we created that, you saw turnovers just start to add up. It was like 3, 4, 2, 3. Like every week we touching it. We getting something, we bringing the ball back. So just having that sort of identity about ourselves, I think allowed us to thrive the way we did. And a lot of credit to Jim for orchestrating it.
I love that. Man, I miss playing football. You make me miss it. Last year, at what moment of the season, you know, after the Greenbrier, what was the moment of the season that happened where you was like, you know what, this team is very special?
Yeah, Baltimore Ravens.
Really? Just like that?
On the road, Baltimore Ravens. Like, we went there, we started a game, pick six.
Yeah. Yeah, like, we remember.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, pick six. And it was in that moment. And honestly, I think the next series defensively, we gave up like a 50-yard run, you know, down the sideline.
Yeah,
so nothing was going right for us. Mm-hmm. In a game where we needed to win, they beat us at home.
Yeah,
we now stepping in today, they home territory, mm-hmm. and we got to handle business. And all I remember is not seeing a guy flinch on the sideline. Like, nobody was wavered. Nobody was stressed. Nobody was panicked. And you look at that moment like, wow. Like, because of what we've gone through, we're now equipped for this moment.
Mm-hmm.
We stand – we're now poised. We're focusing on the next play, not the previous play. And we're staying together, more importantly. And we're still trusting our coaches and the guys next to us that they're going to do their job for the remainder of this game. Because those are the only things that are going to get you out of any tough situation.
That's right.
And so for us to play the way that we did in all phases, because it took every phase to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
And then credit for having like a man.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah. Like, he came like, out of halftime on some other.
14-14, balling. Then defensively, we get a pick six.
Great.
Yeah. I mean, everybody was stepping up. Mike Ford with an interception at the end of half. But, like, it took every ounce of that Cleveland Browns team to complete the mission. And when I look back on that moment, I said, that's it.
Yeah.
That's going to be the one right there. And everybody, a lot of guys will credit that game, you know, to why we continue. And like I said, the next week we find out that
on Wednesday
we lose our quarterback.
Yeah. And then beat the Steelers.
I'm telling you, like, it's that was the moment. That was the aha moment. Like, yeah, we've arrived.
Yeah.
So you know, in Baltimore, the way you kind of walk out, you end up coming down that thin stair to the buses. And so I was out there, and that was the game when I was like kind of talking to everybody. It was such a euphoric feeling, right? And it felt to me, you know, from guys like you, even talking to Deshaun, like that was the moment, and you guys were like, we could go win the Super Bowl.
Telling you, like that we found ourselves.
Yeah.
Like who we, you know, that what's that? What's the coach? Green. What's his?
Dennis.
Dennis Green. Dennis right. Green. Yeah.
They are.
Yeah. And that's exactly how we felt. Like, man, everything we said about ourselves up until this moment, like that was it.
Mm-hmm.
That was that.
And is that what fuels the hunger? Because you guys never got to see that. You had the moment, and you were ready to run. and then didn't get an opportunity to do that, at least the way that you thought you were going to in that
Correct.
Moment.
Correct, because all of the pieces weren't in play. And so, you know, now we're saying, look, we got all the pieces we need, and we can run the table.
Yeah, I remember Deshaun even came off that. He's like, I'm me again. He's like,
yeah,
I'm back.
Yeah, like that was that was a defining moment for us as a team last year, and it's gonna take more of that this year.
Yeah,
like leave no mistake about it. You know, we're not a surprise anymore, right? And the hardest thing you can do in life is do something the second time.
Yeah,
and so now that we're gonna step into the stage again, the lights will be shining bright for us because they understand, you know, who we are. Mm-hmm. And we've now formed that identity about ourselves off the work that we did last year. So now the same work plus some got to go into this year in order for us to reach, you know, that top of the mountain that we're seeking.
I love it.
And the division, by the way, they didn't. Nobody else took this offseason off.
I looked at, I'm on social the other day, and then I scroll, and they're ranking every division, and there we go at number one.
Yeah,
we're at number one. But there's nothing that you want more is to say, man, look, we handle business. You know, we were able to raise that banner in the best division of NFL history or even that year. Mm-hmm. And it took hard work and dedication, commitment, everything that comes with it. And it's nothing else that you want more. You know, I don't want anything easy in life. I never had it that way.
Me
so,
either.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I want your best. That's what brings out my best. So that's what I'm expecting this year.
Well, we are thrilled to have you. I'm
fired.
Yeah, why we got to wait till September, man? I know you can enjoy your summer. You know, you probably got some more vacations lined up. But, Rad, so happy to have you back because I think not only for what you bring and the elite play on the field, what you bring to this locker room, the leadership, all of it, the mentality that you were just talking about, the championship mentality, it's huge to have in this building. So we're so happy that you're back.
Man, I appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so are we. All right, we'll be back with more. I don't know if we're going to how we're following this up.
I know,
but right? We'll be back with more Cleveland Browns Daily brought to you by Ballybet right after this.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Be a part of one of the most passionate fan bases in the NFL. Join NextGen STM presented by Ticketmaster, the official waitlist of the Cleveland Browns. Being a NextGen STM is the best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM to reserve your spot today. Man, that was good.
He got me ready.
I know you're ready.
Listen, you're
ready.
Listen, I'm about to lose 15 pounds, and I'm about to make a comeback.
Let's go.
I got to be teammates with Rodney.
I mean.
Listen, that's a good leader right there.
He is incredible. I mean, that was just – it was incredible. And you talked about coach. I mean, he would be a phenomenal coach, but it's great to have a guy who can be a coach and a leader, but also go make plays for you on the football field. And Rodney McLeod certainly can do that. All right, Kevin Stefanski down at the owners' meetings in Florida. Here's highlights from his annual meeting with the media, and we'll hear more from Coach later on this week.
The most recent. Why are you bringing Cade York back?
Yeah, you know, as you saw with Cade, we're excited about him. It didn't work out, but you never know how this business works. So the ability to bring Cade back into the fold, I think is great for him, for us. So excited about it.
Mike Vrabel, adding him to the organization, how long were those, you know, how you guys kind of in those talks, and what do you hope they kind of get out of Mike?
I'll let Vrabes kind of speak for his perspective. From my perspective, we're very excited to get Vrabes up there. I can tell you just having him and throwing a brown sweatshirt on him was a big deal for me, get the kid back up in the Northeast Ohio. He's a person that I really, I feel really strongly about the person and the coach. And, you know, I've developed a relationship with Vrabes over the years, Andrew as well. So when he didn't have a head coaching job this last cycle, you know, I made sure that he knew that we would love to get him up there in some capacity. So that was really the beginning of that conversation. But just having him, we had him up there last week, did a great job. And really, he's a resource. He's a resource for me, he's a resource for Andrew, and I'm very, very excited to have him.
Why did you guys feel it was important to reshape the quarterback room?
I don't know that reshape the room was the goal, Tony. I think it was just always every year looking at what is the best way to put that room together. We're excited about Jameis. You know, I think Jameis is a really, really talented young player. Just getting to know him over the course of the last couple weeks, he's a great teammate. He's excited about helping the team. Obviously, able to bring in Tyler Huntley, another young player that we've competed against. So I think it's just a matter of adding some good young players to the room.
You and Andrew both said you'd love to have Flacco back. Why isn't he back?
Well, I would just say with Joe, number one, and we've talked about it, last year was great. You know, getting to know him, getting him implemented into our team, what he meant, the impact he had, was special, as we talked about. I think every year you have to look at your roster, look at the team, and make decisions that you think are right for the football team. We're really excited about Jameis. He's a talented, talented football player. I'm excited about his fit with what we're doing, but that was really the crux of it.
The trade for Jerry Jones, mm-hmm. and the extension on top of that, why was that so important?
We're excited about adding Jerry to that room. He's another talented young player. He can win in a variety of ways. We just think if you add good players to the complement of who you have already, it makes life easier on the other guys as well. So Jerry's a guy that we've spent a lot of time on, both when he was coming out, over the past few years as he's maybe been available potentially, so we've done work on him. Really like his skill set, like his ability to separate, like his ability to make plays with the football.
Kevin, it sounded like you're actually introducing new language into the offensive playbook also, via Cat.
Yeah.
So will he call plays?
Well, I'll start with the language part. You know, we always look at our system. I'm not married to any words, so we're not changing anything just for the sake of changing things. But if there's better terminology to use, if there's better scheme, if there's better coaching points, we're all ears. As it relates to calling plays, that's not something I'm
going to...
Not ready. You'll be the first one to know, Tony. But you know, for me, the focus, we're doing so much work in that offensive meeting room right now and having so many really good conversations. And again, I want to go back. The coaches that we've been able to add, whether it's Andy Dickerson, Roy Isfahan, Deuce Staley, Tommy Rees, we've added these guys, and they've all brought so much to the table, literally and figuratively maybe, but really excited about those guys.
Did you think it was just time after 4 years to change offensively with the six new coaches and quarterbacks?
For me, you're always trying to get better, Tony, and sometimes change can be hard. But with what we're doing, I'm really excited about the guys that we brought in. And again, because you bring in different perspectives. And the guys that we brought in have added a lot already.
If the Browns are chosen to play the Eagles in Brazil, what are the advantages and disadvantages of playing in the very first week?
Well, I just got off the phone with Mo, and he's on top of it, so he'll let us know. Yeah, he'll let us know if we're playing there. Yeah, we'll see. As you know, it's us and Green Bay, apparently. We don't know, they don't know, but we'll play anywhere, Tony, wherever they tell us. We don't set the schedule. We don't really care.
With that long entryway into that first game, is that better than the middle of the season?
It's a good question. We'll see. I think the travel itself is the same for both teams, so there's not really an advantage or a disadvantage in that regard, so... I'm just waiting to hear, like all of us.
Is it better than playing them in the link?
I would think any team is better playing in a neutral site than playing in their home site. But, again, we don't set the schedule.
So not a single question yet about defense.
Yeah, I'm ready.
The way the season ended in Houston, is that a shock to the team, the organization? I mean, there have been no changes on defense, and yet the season ended pretty badly defensively.
It's a good question, Tony. Obviously, no one was happy with how it ended, and we know, and we knew in the moment, we knew watching the tape, we know now that we have to play better in a moment like that as a team. But I don't think it's fair to discount the defense in total. So we played really good defense, historic defense at times. We know we can play better. Coach Schwartz is committed to making sure that we play better. So those are things that we'll work through. So not... In no way do you not Do you minimize that game because it was important and we're disappointed how it ended? But we want to make sure that we learn from the entirety of the season as we move forward.
What did you – you did make one change on the defensive staff and defensive line coach. What you know, what did you kind of see there and what are you adding with Cesarian?
Yeah, Jacques is a guy that played in this league for a long time. He's really a self-made man. He to play for as long as he did, coming from where he came, he's got an incredible story. And then he's coached in this scheme for a few years there down in Houston. He gets a lot out of his players. So we're excited about adding Jacques to the mix.
When it comes to Watson kind of getting back to his Houston form, do you think it's just a matter of keeping him on the field the whole season?
I do. More than that? I do. I've seen it from Deshaun. We've seen it from Deshaun. Don't have to look very far, or don't have to look back too far. Look at that second half versus Baltimore. I mean, that's as gutty a performance as it comes, and what he's able to accomplish on a bad ankle with a bad shoulder, just the plays that he's made for us over these years. I've seen it from him, so yeah, of course, keeping him healthy, keeping him on the field is really important, and he wants that too. He's so competitive, so he's really attacking this rehab, so he's ready to go ASAP. Yeah, it's the best division football. We know that. We love that about our division. We know how competitive it is. We know that every game is going to be a tough game. We have great, you know, I look at the other coaches in this division that are outstanding, great talent along the rosters. So we know that that everybody else is always trying to improve the roster. We're doing the same, but excited about it.
All right, that's Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski from the NFL owners meetings down in Florida. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Browns offseason, get Tyvus' take on some of the things that have happened here with this team, especially on the defensive side of the football. Still got a chance for some mailbag questions all coming your way here. Cleveland Browns Daily brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio.
Cleveland Browns Daily brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, a sports betting partner of your Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio. Nathan Zgura and Tyvus Powell. All right, Tyvus, let's talk a little about the offseason here. Browns made a lot of moves, both sides of the ball, really bringing back a lot of key pieces on the defensive side, the addition, obviously, of a guy like Jordan Hicks as well, Quentin Jefferson along the defensive line. What did you think about what the Browns have done, what Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski and Paul DePodesta have put together?
I thought it was a lot of solid moves. I thought they were the right moves. You know, when you think about, like, Za'Darius Smith,
yep.
Like, this is it. A lot of people weren't high on Za'Darius, but this is the thing about Za'Darius that I think a lot of people would agree with. When he got here, he was one of the first people outside of probably Jim Schwartz that challenged Myles Garrett.
Absolutely.
They had a drill. I remember when I was watching it, I think it was during OTAs, they had a drill where they were doing get-offs, and Myles kind of didn't go all the way, and he was like, no, we're going to do it again. And that was like the first time I seen somebody challenging Myles Garrett. And obviously you see Myles going to have this incredible season. Why? Because he finally had a big brother that was in there pushing him like that, you know, from a leadership standpoint. And then on top of that, we've seen Alex Wright take another step.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure Za'Darius is probably in his ear getting with him, teaching him how to be successful, because maybe Alex Wright looks at Za'Darius like, hey, I can be more like you. You know, Miles is a freak. I can't probably do all the things that Miles can do, but I can do some of the things that Za'Darius could. So I thought from a leadership standpoint, it was great to bring him in there. I was kind of shocked when they didn't bring Taki Taki back. I thought he had an unbelievable season last year, especially when it came to the passing grade. But the pass coverage, I thought he was
paid, man. Yeah,
he did. Good for him. Yep. But I was kind of shocked.
Great for him.
I was kind of shocked that he didn't get brought back. But bringing in Jordan Hicks, a guy who's actually from Ohio, I think he went to Lakota West.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's nice to have him here. He's been with Jim Schwartz. He understands the defense. He has been a captain on the defense before. So now you have another voice there, and especially at that linebacker position. You want a guy that can command a huddle, and I think he can do that. As far as the defensive tackles goes, I was pretty happy with all of them. You know, Shelby, I played with Shelby in Denver, so I knew Shelby was really good. I was happy to see him come back.
Yep.
Mo Hurst has been very effective. He just obviously he dealt with the injury and that kind of messed him up, but I thought he was trending in a really good direction. Listen, the Browns didn't really need to make a lot happen on the defensive side of the ball. I thought that they were pretty solid there. Even with the depth pieces that they had, they were all really solid. Offensively, you know, going to get Jerry Jeudy.
Yep.
I mean, when I first heard it, I wasn't thrilled by it. But now when I'm sitting here thinking about it, like, Jerry Jeudy is a really good talent. Like, giving up a fifth and a sixth for a first-round talent, you'll take that any day of the week. And I think Jerry Jeudy is a guy who has all the potential in the world. You know, he's very shifty. He does run really crisp routes. But I think he struggled with not having that quarterback that can get him the ball, you know. So hopefully with Deshaun in this new offense and also being surrounded by other weapons like Amari Cooper, David Njoku, it should free him up and he should have a really good year as well. So I was happy with those, with that move as well.
When you're a guy like Jerry Jeudy, South Florida, went to Alabama because – he admired Amari Cooper, and now he's going to get to come play with Amari Cooper. How much does that matter? Is that a situation where you would look at and say, all right, whatever the best of Jerry Jeudy is, we're going to get that because he's going to be learning from one of the very best, somebody that he admires and respects immediately?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, it's funny. Now, I did. Me and Jerry Jeudy, our situations were similar, but Jerry Jeudy is a much more better football player than I was. He was a much more better talent than me. When I went to Seattle, the reason I chose to go to Seattle was because my idol in college was Cam Chancellor. Mm-hmm. Now, I was never going to be Cam Chancellor, but you telling me I get to learn from my idol, it made my career so much better because I got to be around a guy who's an all-pro. You know, Mark Cooper's maybe he's not an all-pro, but he's at the top of his game. He's done some amazing things in this NFL. To get that direct one-on-one relationship and learn from that guy is going to make Jerry Jeudy a much, much better player because you'll listen to what he's saying, and then you'll go out there and you'll do what he's saying, and you'll find, like, wow, this is really working. I'm finding a bunch of success in what he's saying, and it's going to also make him a better player because the same thing happened to me when I was with Cam Chancellor.
Yeah, I think that's kind of – that's the thinking there, and certainly, guy's an unbelievable talent. Averaged about 9 yards a target for his career, which is a pretty good number. You get him with a good quarterback, I think he has a chance to be very good, and the Browns obviously anticipate that. They gave him a contract extension. Now, the real numbers came out this week.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good deal for the Browns if he becomes – a solid,
which they always do a really good job of doing. I mean, a couple of years ago, saying that about Chief.
Exactly.
It's like, why are they giving him this contract? And now you look forward and you're like, oh, it was a really good idea for them to do that. Get ahead of it because they understand, listen, this is going to be a talented guy. We're going to make sure that it works for us and he's going to be really great. So let's pay him now. And just in case, because the numbers is going to go up and it'll look like a really good deal in a couple of years.
It certainly is the hope. All right, real quick, we got some questions in here for the mailbag for you. And this is one we'll answer here from our good friend Bobby. You can have dinner with one of these celebrities, Tiger Woods, The Rock, Larry David, or Taylor Swift. Who are you picking?
Ooh.
I'm picking Larry David.
I'm picking The Rock. The Rock has been an idol of mine since I was a kid.
The great one.
When I was a kid, when I was in kindergarten, I used to actually write my name as The Rock, and my teacher would always give me the paper because she knew I wrote it.
I love it.
Yeah.
The Rock. Listen, The Rock is the great one. He's unbelievable. Are you watching his return to the WWE right now?
I seen it briefly. It's still going?
He's back right now for WrestleMania, and he's been better than ever. You need to be watching.
Well, I'll be watching tonight.
You need to be watching. He's so good right now. For me, it'd be Larry David. I'd love to have dinner with, I mean, all of them. Taylor Swift, I might have to choose because my kids would then think I was so cool.
My wife would think I'm like the coolest person ever.
Because I have bring my kids that. But if it was just me and there was no other implications, I would Larry David.
And speaking of Taylor Swift, my daughter, I was talking to my wife on my drive up here. My daughter was in the background singing Taylor Swift. She's 3 years old. And she had my wife like snapping the chorus. It's unbelievable.
There's a whole catalog. But when I'm driving around with my kids, there's a playlist on Spotify that's the Taylor Swift complete collection. So it's every song, every version, ever. And we have to put on my car where at the very bottom, you can swipe it down so that you can't see what song it is.
Yeah.
And then I have to like guess what song it is. She's got 250 songs, let alone the different versions of the 250 songs.
Ooh.
And I have to get it. If I get it like right away, I get like a full point. If I get it like before the chorus gets going, I get like 0.75. And if like the chorus gets going, I get a half. And if I say it after she said the title of the song, I get bub kiss. So I'm like, Taylor Swift is on constantly in my car. I happen to like her music, so it's good.
Hey,
but
it's good music.
It's a challenge, man.
I actually
there are a lot
know
of songs.
I actually know more Taylor Swift songs than I thought I did.
Yes, and I bet you even know more than you even think that you know. That's because that's pretty.
It's
well.
A movement. It's a movement.
No doubt. All right. When we come back, so much more to come. Time flies when you're having fun. Nathan Zagura, Tyvus Powell, Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Time now for the Griff Fact of the Day. Griff, my question is it about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's beach photos that have the internet abuzz?
Not at all.
Okay, all right.
Fact of the day, fact of the day, fact of the day. It's the Griff Fact of the Day.
So for today's fun fact of the day, the Oklahoma City Thunder starting five has an average age nearly equivalent to that of the Tar Heels for North Carolina.
Wow.
North Carolina's age, 22.2 years. OKC, 22.6.
Wow. Where did you come up with that one, Griff?
I think I've read it on ESPN the other day.
That's a good one. I like that. All right,
OKC
there it is.
OKC is that young, huh?
They are young, yeah. They got Shy, right? Isn't he their best player?
Yeah, Chet, Shy, Josh.
Aren't they like the number one seed in the West? Like
they,
one or two, they're
yeah,
up there.
They've been up there this whole year. They're playing some really good basketball.
They are.
For them to be where they are, it's actually amazing.
By the way, the Bobby Meckling Bobby fact of the day is Bobby cannot do the monkey bars. Come on, Bobby. You can do the monkey bars.
The monkey bars?
He can do the monkey bars.
I haven't done them in a long time.
No. Tyvus, it's been an absolute pleasure. Tomorrow on the program, we'll be joined by the voice of the Cleveland Browns,
ooh,
Jim Donovan.
Ooh.
So that'll be fun. In studio, Gibbe?
In studio.
Ooh, I can finally give him my gift. Oh, baby.
Have you not seen
no
him?
No idea. That's a loaded statement.
Have you not seen him since the last game?
No.
Oh.
No. Well, I'm excited. The one time he came in when I was out. I mean, we've talked a bunch, but no, I haven't got to see him in person ever since everything's been so great. Can't wait to give him a big hug. Tyvus, it was a pleasure.
Always.
We'll do it again soon, I am sure. Griff, great job. Gibbe, great job. The next level is next. Thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.